This is Wage World, where we talk to the most interesting people in the world on KABF 88.3, the voice of the people.
You want to see how the other half lives? You want to see how we get around? Why don't you come visit me?
This is Wade Rathke, and you're listening to Wade's World. It's Friday morning, 9 to 9:30, Central Standard Time in the United States, and your time for the voice of the people. Welcome to the east side of town, so that we can talk about how the other half lives, what life is like here living in Wade's World, whether that's the east side of Little Rock, where KABF 88.3 FM is located, or the east side of New Orleans, Nairobi, Bengaluru, Bristol, or Bombay. Points east and west, where we are either rebroadcast or live streamed at www.kabf.org. Podcast will be available of this show on Monday at that website. You know the story on Wade's World. We talk to the most interesting people in the world, and today we're talking to Becky Bond, who recently wrote a great book with Zach Exley about rules for revolutionaries, is a former senior advisor to the Sanders campaign, longtime social activist, and helping put together the Trump resistance. Welcome to Wade's World, Becky.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here.
Well, good. So first tell people what is the book Rules for Revolutions about? Rules for Revolutionary, excuse me.
Yeah, so Zach Exley and I, we were senior advisors for organizing on the Bernie Sanders campaign, and that meant for a year we got to travel around the country and work with these amazing volunteers who were doing all these advanced and sophisticated campaign tactics to help Bernie win. The volunteers comprised the biggest campaign staff I think we've ever seen in a presidential primary. And along the way, we learned so much from these volunteers that we decided that once the primary is over, we needed to put what we learned in a book. Because with the help of volunteers, getting behind a candidate with a big idea, we were able to create a movement that almost defeated Hillary Clinton and the Democratic establishment. And what we learned while we were doing this was that some of the tactics that we learned from organizing volunteers to run these campaigns in their hometowns all across the country, these were things that could be used to win all kinds of struggles, right? Like whether we're trying to elect someone to a school board, whether we're trying to go up against a corporation that's running an unfair monopoly. And so we wrote a guidebook, basically, to the Bernie tactics and the values that helped us create this really big organizing, and we wanted to share it with activists around the world.
And we're going to help you do that. Now, big organizing, you just mentioned that, and that's the subtitle of your book. What do you all define? Talk to me about big organizing. What does that really mean? Is that a movement? Is that an organization? What's the concept there?
Well, you know, we hear a lot about big money, and we know big money has a huge influence on who gets elected and who can run, and then on what our politicians do once they're in office. And, you know, the other side, they've got a lot of money. But what we've got is we've got a lot of people. And so if we want to go up against big money, we can go up against big money, but we're going to need a big organizing so we can take all the people that are with us and we can turn them into a force that can go up against the rich guys and win. And so we came up with this model called big organizing because with Bernie, when he got started in the race, he had only 3% name recognition. And we knew it was going to take a lot of people to make him competitive with Hillary Clinton. And so we developed this model that we call big organizing. And what big organizing is really based on is that there's this amazing amount of talent and experience and willingness to work out there in the grassroots. But largely it's untapped by politicians or by organizations that are based in Washington, D.C. And so we came up with this plan for a big organizing that would tap into that capacity to do work, that intelligence, that passion, you know, that capacity for work out in the grassroots. And big organizing, it's big in several ways. It's big because it takes a lot of people to participate in it to make it work, so it's a mass participation model, get as many people as possible involved. But it's also big because you have to have a big idea, and a big goal. You have to be shooting for the big victory if you want a lot of people to get involved. Because you know what? Our lives are really busy. People have families. They have two jobs. They're going to school. And they're really not going to take the time to work on your campaign unless if you win, you win something really big like free public college tuition, right? You're solving the big problems. And finally, big organizing is big because we ask people to step up and do big things. We don't just ask them to stuff envelopes and we don't just ask them to knock on doors. We ask them to take responsibility for big chunks of the campaign and for, you know, management positions on the campaign. And you know what? People are, so many people are ready, willing, and able to step up.
And they do step up.
That we
absolutely
were able to do something huge. Yeah.
We hear a lot about disruption, but in some ways, the way y'all describe, you and Zach describe this in your book, there was a lot of disruption that had to do with the techniques y'all put together. And certainly one was the use of volunteers, brainstorming, digital. A lot of people don't put the two together. They think digital and they don't think the doors. But the way y'all are talking about this connects the door knocking and the digital very closely. Talk to us about that.
Well, you know, it's so interesting, you know, like there was a time when people were organizing people in the United States and not everybody had a telephone. And so how you organize is you go out and talk to people, right? And so when we got the telephone, we didn't create this thing called telephone organizing. We just had organizers who had telephones, right? So it's the same thing with internet and digital. For some reason, there's become this thing that people think of, and it's like digital, you know, the internet campaigns, and it's as if it's just something that's just about the internet.
Or a
really
shortcut.
And
y'all are pretty clear it's not a shortcut, and that's important.
It's just how we communicate with people. And look, there's all this software that businesses are using very effectively right now to help people, you know, get to work from wherever they are and work efficiently together, you know, whether you're, you know, in California, whether you're in Arkansas, or whether you're in Nebraska, and work on teams with people that you're not in the same room with. And we were just like, why don't we start using all the software that people are using to do work from wherever? It's most of it's free, right? And why don't we use that to help volunteers get together on teams and do the work of organizing to win elections? And you know, it was really effective.
Talk to me about brainstorming, because that was one of the things that interested me in terms of how y'all recruited volunteers. And I think it's not something normally that people in campaigns would think about.
Yeah, I mean, people
barnstorming, brother. Did I say brainstorming?
Barnstorming.
I'm suffering today.
yeah, you know, it's like it's kind of amazing. You know, we one of the things that I think people have really gotten away from is how important an in-person interaction is. And I'm someone who comes out of like digital and the internet. And if I could stay in San Francisco, California, where I'm based, and sit behind my computer all day and change the world, you know what I mean? I'd probably be happy doing that. But actually, that's not how it works. Right. How it works is people get together in person and make commitments to each other and do work together. And that's the most effective way to get organizing done. And we learned on the campaign, we figured this out, which is that when we send people email, we'd ask them, you know, will you set up a campaign event where you'll get a bunch of people together and you'll make voter contact phone calls? And that just didn't happen. They weren't doing it. We're like, this is crazy. They're writing songs for Bernie. They're like making software for Bernie. They're doing all this stuff. We can't get them, you know, to answer our emails about holding a voter contact event in their hometown. And so we decided, well, what if we go in person to a town and we say, hey, everybody who wants to get to work for Bernie, come meet at this union hall or a lot of public library meeting rooms. And we go and we show up and we'd say, hey, a staffer from the Bernie campaign is coming to help you figure out how to get to work for Bernie. We'd do this and tons of people would show up. People wouldn't answer our emails, but if we said we're coming to town, they would show up. And so we'd go and we'd meet with like 100 people.
And they were ready to work from what our experience is and your experience.
Yeah. Yeah, and we'd say, okay, out of this whole, here's our plan to win, and here's what we need people to do. And then we'd say, we need 10 to 20% of the people in the room to stand up and say that they'll be the leader of an event. Who will do that, right? And then inevitably, 10 to 20% would stand up. And then we'd say, okay. And we'd say, we give everybody a piece of paper, and we'd say, write down the time and place of your event next week. And they'd be like, right now? And they're like, yes, right now. Write it down right now. And then we'd have them come up in the front of the room and we'd tell the other 80% of the people in the room, it's like, okay, you have to sign. These people just put themselves on the line and they're going to host these events next week. You have to sign up for at least one event. And so people in the room would go sign up for the event. And what we had at that moment was we didn't have people on the other side of an email committed loosely to some random person that they don't know. You had people that were like having events. They had met strangers who were coming to their house. this people that were coming to their house knew that if they didn't show up, they were standing up this nice person that did this brave thing. And so the people were committed to each other as well as to the campaign. And then we would take all of that information that we gathered in the meeting and we'd put it into the web, and it would be on map.berniesanders.com, and then we could email people and other people would come and join those people who'd already agreed to the event. But we did 1,000 of these events, Wade, across the country, 1,000 of these in-person organizing meetings. The vast majority of the Bernie Sanders phone contact and texting program were recruited during those meetings. And, you know, we learned at a certain point that it wasn't even just staff running them, that we could actually have volunteers hold these meetings. And of those meetings, 650 of them were actually run by volunteers who got trained over the Internet to do these effective organizing meetings to get the stuff together. And listen, if you want to do something in your town, you know, you can pick up our book, Rules for Revolutionaries. You can read about how you hold one of these meetings. And I guarantee you, if you hold one of these meetings, you'll get people that share your values that maybe you didn't know before. You'll get to work together, and you'll start to make change.
We're talking to Becky Bond, who is one of the senior advisors on the Sanders campaign, and we're talking about what she calls as revolutionary, some rules for revolutionaries, and we believe could make a lot of difference. Now, one of the things that's clear, though, is you were also able to take advantage of some of you and Zach's digital experience. You know, Slack and a number of other tools were helpful in this, from what you described. What kind of CRM? Did y'all have to invent your own sort of software, or did you have CRM that's access to people, open access, or what would people be grabbing?
Yeah, so, you know, we had access to the kinds of tools that campaigns tend to have. And so it's like a web and email system that allows us to create petitions and create an email list of people, and then also a web system for accessing the list of voters and putting information into it. But what we found actually was the fancy software that campaigns pay to get access to, you know, it was kind of crappy and hard to use.
Like Nation Builder, for example.
Yeah, and what's more, it was like the campaign didn't like it when it was difficult for us to let volunteers actually have access to it.
Right, I enjoyed that part of the book.
Yeah, and so we just started using software that was largely free, like Google Apps, and there's a software called Slack, which is free to set up a team. It's like sort of a team chat, you know, working system, and Facebook groups that all the volunteers could have access to. And we started using that to organize, and we actually found out that these free tools that everybody has access to, when we sort of linked them together and we had a lot of people helping us to manage them, that was actually made it easier for us to organize than the fancy tools that we paid for in the campaign. So this is really good news for activists everywhere who may not
have a lot of money to run. These are all things people already know how to use for the most part.
And it's where people are. You know, we would put scripts out for doing phone banking, and we would put them out in Google Docs. And then people would, if there was a mistake in the script or if something kept coming up in calls that needed to be addressed in the scripts, people would just be able to make suggested edits, which people on the campaign could see someone had suggested that. I was like, oh, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. And we'd just approve them, right, or write them into the script. And so it allowed everything to evolve better because it was collaborative. And, you know, so many people know how to use Google Docs, or we could share spreadsheets, you know, and people could put information in when they had, you know, contacted people after events and that kind of thing. So it's a new world in terms of software right now, where there's a real level playing field, where the best software is free and people know how to use it. And it's figuring out how to link in-person action with some of the software that makes it easier to manage things. It can really help you run a sophisticated campaign with no money at all.
One of the things I particularly enjoyed, given the, you know, religion about micro-targeting recently, is y'all argued that you built such a huge volunteer phone system, you could have virtually called everybody everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a lot of assumptions that people make these days. You know, we've seen at the Democratic Party, they assume some people will always be with us, and so they don't even want to talk to those people because where else are they going to go?
Big mistake, as we found out, huh?
Yeah, and then they figure these people never vote. Let's not bother talking to them because no matter what we do, and they make these assumptions. And in reality, you know, we don't know. Like, I think if this election showed us anything, it's like we actually, you know, the parties don't really know where people are, and we need to start talking to everybody. And you know what? There's so many people that have been, you know, inspired to action by this election. to get involved, that I think, you know, it wouldn't be that hard for most people to knock on, to get a group of people to knock on every door in their community or call everyone in their community, find out what's going on, find out who's really with us, who's not, find out who needs to be persuaded and what they care about. And this is something that's not in our targeting models, let me just tell you.
And put faces to faces, which, you know, still can't be beat. But y'all also were able to build a huge phone operation, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, we had people all across the country that cared about what happened, especially in the early contests in the primary. And so we set up, we actually, you know, this is really funny. We actually ended up with this software that, like, debt collectors use to run their call centers. So when you get calls from someone, you know, I mean, chasing after some bill that you didn't pay, you know, it's like that we use the same software that they used to get a bunch of people not to call about unpaid bills, but to get people from across the country to be able to log in and actually call voters. And what we found is there's just a real hunger, you know, to connect and to talk to other Americans, no matter where they live. And if you have a really righteous cause, something that's really, really important, that people from across the country or even across the world will want to help. And having, you know, people like volunteers calling other voters and calling other volunteers was a great way to connect people and actually do work that really, you know, helped advance our cause.
One of the things you said that may have stirred some controversy among the old Sanders veterans is what might have happened if they hadn't spent $98 million on advertising and invested more in the sort of field operation, digital operation y'all were running. What kind of feedback did you get about that, Becky?
Well, you know, let me just say, I think here's the deal is that I think a lot of people didn't know that Bernie Sanders' campaign spent more on ads than any other presidential primary candidate in either party, right? And, you know, I'm a total nerd for the political science around campaigns. And there's just this really growing body of political science experimentation that shows just definitively that a person talking to a voter at the door is so much more a high impact on whether they vote or not than seeing some kind of ad. And yet campaigns spend so, like, huge amounts of their budgets on ads, and it's because it's easy to control from your office in Washington, D.C. or New York City, and, you know, getting a bunch of people to talk to a bunch of other people is really messy, you know what I mean? And it takes a lot of time and a lot of hard work and a lot of management. And so, you know, the field is just biased against the good old kind of organizing that we know works. And so, you know, I think it's really important for everybody, especially people like me that is like came up in digital, and that's the heart of my practice in politics, is that actually the most important thing people can do is talk to people face-to-face or talk to them on the phone, and we have to keep our politics centered on people talking to people, because no matter what you want to think, that is what works, and we need to align our budgets with those priorities.
Well, and I know our friend and colleague Michael Kieschnick, and, you know, back in our experience when you were with Working Assets and Credo, God, I remember the political science folks we used to have to lure in from Yale and everywhere else to study what we were doing on the doors, and wrote books and whatever, but it still, you know, it improved the investment and people going face-to-face, but it never was convincing against all sort of big data arguments. So it's important what conclusions y'all came up with. Look, Becky, we're facing today is the changeover. Trump comes in, Obama's out. I know you've got to have your hands everywhere in what people are calling the resistance or reaction. What are you hearing?
Well, I think what I'm hearing is that we have to work on two fronts. We have to protect our communities that are at risk. You know, this is a guy that wants to deport millions of our neighbors. You know what I mean? And we have to band together to protect people. But we also have to provide an alternative, right? And, you know, Donald Trump ran to the left of the Democratic candidate on the economy and on jobs. And we have a Democratic Party that is too concerned with raising corporate money and with protecting Wall Street, and has really lost touch with you know, the realities that are, you know, facing most Americans in this country. So out of touch that they decided to roll the dice on a guy like Donald Trump, you know, who lied to them, but at least expressed that he recognized that things were really, really tough for people. So I think besides opposing Trump and protecting communities, you know, from his worst policies, we also have to really work to build an alternative, and we have to build a majority of the American people, and that includes a lot of people that didn't vote and includes some people that voted for Trump, especially people who voted for Obama and then moved to Trump, around an agenda that fights both for racial justice and economic justice as part of the same fight. And you know what? We're going to have to fight not just with the Republicans on that, but we're going to have to fight with the Democratic Party to make that a priority. But it's what we have to do if we're going to get ourselves out of this deep, deep hole that we find ourselves in.
So is there a potential alliance then with some of the Trump elements? I mean, you argued just then that, truthfully, that Trump ran to the left of Clinton in the general election on some economic issues. Is there some common cause that you're hearing that might be possible to be put together, or are we just all by ourselves out there?
I think, I mean, not with Trump or his administration, but look, there's a lot of people out there that didn't vote for the Democrats because the Democrats, you know, aren't saying that they're going to make it possible so they go to the hospital when they're sick, that aren't going to, you know, protect American jobs and start rebuilding our infrastructure. So, you know, we have to come together around an agenda that's going to work for everybody. And, you know, I think a lot of people, they didn't really so much vote for Trump's agenda as they voted for some kind of change.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? That might be better.
Yeah.
Right. And we have to listen to those people and find out what that is. And we have to give them the alternative that we know is going to work, which is one that is one that embraces economic justice and fights against those who want race to divide us, and we're gonna have to make a lot of demands. But look, there's lots of good people out there that didn't vote and that share our values didn't vote and that share our values and voted for Trump because they either didn't know or they believed the wrong thing or because they felt such despair that they felt like any change might be better for them and their family. And it's our job to go out and find a common cause with those people and bring them over to a more righteous path. But that starts with a real alternative. But it's not going to happen. If we call people haters and we dismiss them, we have to have a majority to win an election. And we can build that majority not by lowering our standards, but by fighting for what's right and getting leaders out there that will actually lead on the issues that the American people need leadership on.
And we start in a good place. If there's only 44% that are supporting Trump now, usually this is the honeymoon period, that's, you know, 56% are already leaning that way, and a lot of the 44% still have big question marks. I know I talked to a lot of people who voted for Trump, and you say, what's he going to do? And they look at you and say, we don't know either. So if we're willing to see the entire population as a base, there's some real opportunities for us to still pull something progressive out of this on the streets, isn't there?
Yeah, that's right. And we got to talk to, it just comes back, we got to talk to everybody, right?
Exactly.
And find out who's really with us, find out who's against us, and then find out who's persuadable. And then we stopped having those conversations, you know, because people, there's just, you know, the elites don't want to deal with the people that are in the middle of the country. And that's a mistake, you know, and we've let the elites take control of our politics, so we've got to take that control back. We need all kinds of diversity. We need racial diversity. We need diversity in gender, but we also need diversity in geography in terms of who, you know what I mean, is in charge of stuff from the media to, you know, to what's happening in government. And then, you know, I heard this person say, you know, that one of the problems with our media is that we don't have a diversity and trust in institutions. And I think that's a real big deal. We need our leaders to rethink how much they trust our institutions and start thinking about the outcomes we need to see and what the paths are to that. Because I think we have a lot of institutions that that could come down and be replaced. And we can't keep propping up all this stuff that doesn't work.
It's important for the kind of lessons y'all are talking about in the Sanders campaign to get out there. I was talking to a guy who's been a political consultant for years, who expert in digital stuff. He said he wanted to get out of digital, Becky, because all candidates and campaigns wanted to know is how much money he could raise digitally, not how to use the tools. Isn't that a funny kind of way people are pulling out the lessons on the Sanders work?
Yeah, and you know, and one of the things that we have a bunch of rules in our book, and one rule is like the revolution will not be staff, which is like if you want to have a really big movement, you know what I mean, it can't be all staff driven. You've got to let volunteers in. Another one is the revolution will be funded by small dollar donations, and so the Bernie Sanders campaign and other campaigns have showed that actually if you have an agenda that really addresses what the people want, they'll chip in for it, right?
Exactly.
And so, if you're funded by small dollar donations, you can do the things, you know, that are the right things, right? And not just the things that the corporate donors want. And so I think it's an exciting world, you know, where we can connect how the money comes in with how the money gets spent. And everybody can be a part of that.
There's a huge gap, I think, a vacuum in the country now that in terms of organizational and other kinds of activity to move forward. Using the kind of tools you all have talked about in the book, do you see these just as campaign-based, or could they be applied to building large-scale movements and organizations, or what?
I think the values and the tactics that we learned in the Bernie campaign work at the local, state, you know what I mean, national or international level. It's really for any group of people, small or large, right, who want to go for something big, something that the people really care about. And that could be taking over your school board, you know what I mean, or that could be a movement to change out our entire government in the United States. And, you know, it's really like what we can do with these people-powered tactics, right? This is every successful movement in the United States has been a mass participation movement, and we've really gotten away from that, right? And so I think that this is not just applying, these principles don't just apply to campaigns. Presidential campaigns only come around every 4 years. I mean, let's hope that they don't get suspended, you know what I mean, by this new administration. But this book is for people in everything they're fighting for every day. It's about how to get together with some other folks and actually come up with a plan for change and invite other volunteers to come in and do the work of that plan, and start winning big things at every level. Because you know what, there's a lot to do, and there's no way people that actually have an official job in politics can get all this stuff done. They can't even get a fraction of it done. In fact, they're taking us backwards, right? So it's time to put the power back in the hands of people who have been responsible, the mass participation people who are responsible for from the women's liberation movement to the civil rights movement to the labor movement. Every big one we've had has been, I don't know why it's so hard for us to get our heads around, has been about when masses of people got involved and took the lead. And now we have big challenges, but you know, because actually the software is so cheap to help people work across time, I've had people, you know, the veterans in the 70s, veterans from the civil rights and the labor movements, are like, oh my God, if we have what you have now, we could have done even more, right? And so it's time for us to take charge ourselves.
Well, and that's why we, you know, saw with Acorn, you could have, you know, 500,000 members paying dues. So tell us where can people get this book? Tell us the whole details, full name, where is it available?
That's great. Yeah. So the book, it's called Rules for Revolutionaries, How Big Organizing Can Change Everything. And you can get this at your local bookstore, probably has it if you still have one. It's great to call them up and ask for it. You can also order it online from any of the, if you don't have a local bookstore that has it, from Amazon or Barnes & Noble's or Powell's Books. You know, really get your hands on one of these books, read it, pass it around to your friends. You can also go to rulesforrevolutionaries.org and drop us a line if you have a question about it. And we'd love to continue the conversation about the change you're trying to make.
And you can tell people how to eat their own dog food. So you said, now the website is Rules for Revolutions.
Rulesforrevolutionaries.org.
Rulesforrevolutionaries.org. And are y'all going to be around the country?
Yeah, we're going around the country talking to people about this. And so, you know, we'll if you want us to come to your town, drop us a line at the website. We're visiting all sorts of great organizing groups. I just talked to someone who wants us to come out to Omaha, Nebraska, you know, for a big convention that they're having for activists. And, like, those are the places where we really want to go, where people are getting together, you know, to make change and take back their states. Especially if you live in a red state, we would love to come and see you and talk about the book and talk about what you're trying to change and even hold an organizing meeting together. That would be great.
Well, and we're going to have a whole bunch of people listening for you next Saturday. You heard it, rulesforrevolutionaries.org. That's how you can find Becky and get more information on this. This is powerful tools and powerful rules that they learned on the Sanders campaign. This has been Wade's World for another week, the world where the other half lives, where we talk about things you've never heard, and as Lucinda Williams sang, things you've never seen and will never forget. We say it loud, we say it on the air, we say it on the radio. Until next week when we'll have another guest, this is Wade Rathke from Wade's World.